tried as a Verizon guy, or was it, who was it? Sprint, can you hear me now? All right, we're ready to go. All right, we're going to start off tonight in session 5, and I thought I had the page number here. If somebody sees that. 40, page 40. Very good. And we are going to start by looking at developmental obstacles of spiritual gifts. Boy, I had to scratch my head on what he meant there. Well, this is the challenges facing you as you develop your gifts. So we want to look at how to develop your gifts. And the first thing that we want to look at is to seek to excel in edifying the church. This is one of the reasons we want to do it. So what does edifying mean? Well, this is to instruct or improve someone morally or intellectually. Instruct or improve someone morally or intellectually. So we want to seek to instruct or improve this body, don't we? 1 Corinthians 14, and let's go ahead and turn there. 1 Corinthians chapter 14 and verse 12. I need to just calm down here. Running around getting that mic's got me all wound up. Verse 14 reads, "For if I pray in a tongue, my spirit prays, but my understanding is unfruitful." That is not the right verse. Oh, I'm 14:14, aren't I? Even so, you, since you are zealous for spiritual gifts, let it be for the edifying of the church that you seek to excel. Okay? So we are to seek spiritual gifts. Why? Why do we want to excel in them? To edify the church. We want to do it so that the church is built up, don't we? So that's the first reason we want to do this. So we want to learn. Oh, and here's my verse. All right, I will get it together here, hopefully. So the first thing we want to do is learn how to practice our gifts. And to do that, we want to learn what we can do with them. So let's think about a couple gifts here. First of all, the gift of mercy. And you all have been practicing this. What can you do with the gift of mercy? Well, you can visit the sick or the shut-ins. A person with the gift of mercy has a special connection to these kind of people. They feel drawn to them. Not just because they're sorry for them, but because they just feel a connection there. The Spirit leads them there. What about a person with the gift of tongues? I've been having a lot of conversations about this for some reason. But what about this gift of tongues? Do we see it practiced today? Well, see, a person with the gift of tongues has a special ability from God to be able to pick up language easily, to be able to reach a people group that they otherwise would not be able to reach. My wife has this gift. She picks up languages very easily. She can be around somebody for a week and be able to converse with them. In addition to that, people with the gift of tongues are very good communicators. If you need to write something out and be very clear, a person with the gift of tongues is your person. They know how to say it. So learn what you can do with your gift. Then we want to learn in what way or when we should practice it. Sisters, you may have the gift of prophecy. What does that mean? Well, if you have the gift of prophecy, you also need to know when you can use it. You see, the Bible talks very specifically about that gift and when you should use it, and it says not to use it in a mixed gathering. It also tells you that when you pray or prophesy, your head is to be covered. So learn how to use your gift. Learn when to use your gift. How about the gift of hospitality? I've been hearing a lot of talk about this one too. I just don't have this gift. Is it wrong for me not to have it? Is it wrong for me not to practice it? Well, you see, the person with the gift of hospitality, it doesn't matter how high the dishes are stacked in the sink or how big the pile of laundry is at the front door, you're welcome to come. And they always have people around. It's fun. People enjoy going there. It doesn't matter what it looks like. But learn when you can practice it. How can it be practiced? You may enjoy having people stay at your house that you've never met before. Or just feeding them. Maybe somebody from the community. I don't know. There's all kinds of ways that can be practiced. The next thing we want to do is learn how we should practice it. How? Well, we know that it is supposed to be used under authority. We are all under authority here, aren't we? Even Dana. We are all under authority. But for us lay people, we are to practice it under the authority of our ministers, under the authority of our husbands or our parents. You see, the person with the gift of teaching is not necessarily free to just start a class, are they? We had a little problem with this church, with a person at our church a number of years ago who was not even a member. And she came in and just started teaching classes. She would just all of a sudden talk to some people, and all of a sudden they'd start having a class on Sunday morning. And it's like, what's going on here? Okay? She was unwilling, first of all, to become a member, so she wasn't putting herself under authority. And then she was doing this stuff outside of the authority of the church. Okay? That is not acceptable. Learn to use it under authority. Seek permission. Learn where you should practice it. We already talked, you know, several nights ago about how gifts benefit you. They benefit you as a young person. They benefit you as an adult. They benefit you as an employer. But you are supposed to use them for what they were intended for, and use them for the benefit of the church. Is it wrong to use it with your family? No, not at all. Is it wrong to use it in your workplace? No, it's a benefit to you. Learn where to practice them. We also want to learn how to be more productive with our gifts. And the first thing you see there is that you need to receive training in them. Luke 6, verse 40 says, "But everyone who is fully trained will be like his teacher." The disciples followed Jesus. They were becoming what he was teaching them to be, right? We are to be teaching others to do the same. You know, there's scriptures that talk about women, older women, teach the younger women. We are to be teaching. And we are to receive teaching. Learn about your gifts' weaknesses. They have weaknesses. For instance, people with the gift of service. And if you would, in your book, go back to page 88 in the adult book or page 78 in the youth book. Page 88, the gift of service. There's strengths and weaknesses here for you to cheat on, to figure this out easily. You see, there are some pretty major weaknesses here. It says that these people tend to overlook areas the help need to change. Wow. So I might be helping someone, but instead of helping them, I may only be enabling them. Or limited term relationships. It's hard for me to have those true, long-time friends. They tend to forget about the spiritual needs, only seeing the physical needs. Well, this person is hungry. I have to feed them. Or they forget about their own family needs. How tragic is that? They also find that it's very difficult to say no to things. They see a need, they've got to do it. They've got to help. And so they might forget about their family. Learn about its weaknesses. Also learn about its strengths. So the same group of people here, wow, look at this! They help others feel special and cared for. They're people-oriented. There's always people around them. They minister to the physical needs. Boy, this is the kind of person I want to be my friend. They treat others as more important than themselves. And they're always available to help. Man, I want 24 of these people in my church. Okay? Learn about the strengths and weaknesses, because as great as it is to have these strengths, it can be a real challenge to deal with the weaknesses. So learn about them. Learn about the gifts that complement it. Learn about its greater effectiveness. Go to Bible school. Attend seminars, conferences, training sessions. Do all you can to figure it out. Learn what edifies the body. I'm sorry, I'm one behind. Maybe I'm several behind. Yes, learn which gifts work together. And then learn what edifies the body. I've gotten all turned around here. Got off my notes. Learn which gifts work together in the body. On page, what is it here? Sort together in the body. All right, well, I'm going to try to move ahead here. I don't think I'm supposed to be there yet. So these are obstacles to developing your spiritual gifts, and I didn't think I had gotten there yet. All right, well, the next thing we need to do is learn about obstacles to developing our spiritual gifts. Obstacles are things that block one's way or hinder one's progress. 2 Corinthians 10:12 says, "But they measure themselves by themselves and compare themselves among themselves are not wise." You see, when we compare ourselves with others, we develop feelings of worthlessness. This is just bothering me. All right, I've got to back up. I need to explain this graph to you. I'm not sure where it fell in my notes, but all the gifts are divided into four categories. And you said this was on page 73, there at the back of your book. There's just a minor difference here. But you can classify all the gifts into these four quadrants. And we talked the first night that the spiritual gifts are loosely related to your personality. And also your birth order. So here in the top we've got the pastoral gifts. These guys are very caring. They're usually in public ministry of some sort. Down here we've got the prophetic gifts. They're also very much in public leadership. We've got the charismatic gifts. These are the gifts that some groups would say are extinct. And then we've got the caring gifts. These guys like to work in the background. They don't like to be noticed. They don't like to be recognized for the things that they're doing. And you can see here as well the order in which these people might be born. Now, birth order can really get mixed up really fast if the second born is maybe a little stronger in their personality, or if there might be a child that is handicapped or sick, they might get bumped down. So it's very loosely related to the birth order. What you do see is that people in the pastoral category tend to be of the melancholy personality type. Prophets tend to be choleric. Charismatic people tend to be sanguine. And caring is phlegmatic. The only difference here from your book is that we've also got a name here of a person in the Bible who is most likely in this category. So, pastor would be Barnabas. Paul, no shocker there, was very prophetic. Peter was pretty charismatic. And then Stephen, we know he was in that caring group. Now here's where it gets interesting, because all these people are here, but we find that this group gets along very well. They aren't offensive to one another. Pastors tend to be very caring and loving and gentle and leading you along. Charismatic people are very flamboyant. You know, they're this way and then they're that way and then they've got something else to go do. And the pastors tend to be able to, you know, see what's going on and help them, and they're gentle with them. Similarly are the caring people who are just, you know, they see the needs, they get it done. They help wherever they can. And so they get along well with the pastors, and they also get along well with the charismatics. But then comes the prophets. These guys are just abrasive. They talk off the top of their head, it seems. They're hard to get along with. They're always right, it seems. They're very black and white. It's either yes or it's no. There's no gray ground with these guys. And so they find it very difficult to get along with these guys who are so wishy-washy. They're over here and then they're over there and then you never know where they're going to land. It drives these guys crazy. And they're so abrasive that these guys are, you know, just shocked. How could you say that? Oh, that you hurt their feelings. Oh, ugh. But the pastors up here, they understand, they see what these guys are seeing. They just wouldn't have said it that way. I had a question earlier today about you young people who can use this to figure out who to marry. How do we do that? Well, it's difficult as a young person to be able to understand it, but your parents can help you with it because they can see where you lay in these areas. And they can see what's going on with that person that you're kind of getting a little friendly with. How they might relate. You see, if you are here, you don't want to marry somebody over here. You will butt heads all the time. It's going to be a lot of work. At the same time, you don't want two people getting married that are both right here. It's going to be crazy. So you want to look at who you can get along with. And if you know your strengths and your weaknesses, you can find somebody that complements you. Parents, sometimes that intuition, especially moms, just seem to know, this isn't going to work. But we don't know why. How can we help our kids understand this? Look at this. See if you can figure out what your child, or you should know what your child is after this weekend. But then try to understand their friend. All right, now we'll move on. Learn what edifies the body. Learn how to use your gift to build up the congregation. Next, we want to look at the obstacles to developing your spiritual gifts. Here we got a little bit of an obstacle course. I think we've got some children that would like to go and run around here and burn off some energy. What do you think? Looks kind of fun. What is an obstacle course? It's a challenge. It's a whole group of challenges that you're trying to figure out how to get through, isn't it? We have obstacles to figure out in developing our spiritual gift. 2 Corinthians 10:12 reads, "But they measure themselves by themselves and compare themselves among themselves are not wise." You see, when we compare ourselves with others, we develop feelings of worthlessness. Poor self-worth or inferiority, low self-esteem. This is not the same as unworthiness. When we compare ourselves with others, we destroy our self-worth. What do you see? Anybody want this car? Well, what is this? Well, it's a Ford. It's a Mustang. It's red. This is a 5.0. Early 90s model. That thing had a V8 engine in it, put out 435 horsepower and 400 pounds of torque at the wheels. This thing was fast. And when that car came out, I was living in Albuquerque, and the city police department bought a whole fleet of these things. Problem was, they were so fast and so light that within 5 years, they wrecked every single one of them. My sister lusted after that car. That was her dream car. She wanted that one. When she got married, she got this one, which is what her husband had. This was my dad's dream car. His dad wouldn't let him have it because he said it was too worldly. What's the difference? Well, they're both Fords, they're both red, they're both Mustangs, they're both two-door hatchbacks, they're both fast. Who wants this one? My sister hated that car. Didn't help that she was living in Florida and that she didn't have air conditioning in it, and that her husband had never changed the tires on it, so it still had some really bad dry-rotted tires, and it would blow them while she was driving on the interstate. But other than that, it was a nice cherry red car. How about this one? Who wants this one? Why? It's the same thing. It's a Ford. It's a Mustang. It's red. It's a two-door hatch or two-door coupe. It's a 5.0. It's a 2019. Comparing ourselves among ourselves causes us to destroy our own self-worth. How about these? Well, here we've got two animals. They're both fast. One is a predator. The other is prey. What would happen if that horse said, because I am not a cheetah, I am therefore no longer an animal? You see, that's what this verse is saying. Verse 15 of 1 Corinthians says, because I am not a hand, I am not of the body. In other words, if mercy should say, because I am not discernment, I am not part of the body. comparing ourselves with others detracts. Now what am I doing? Okay. Comparing ourselves with others detracts from God's design. 1 Corinthians 12:17 says, "If the whole body were an eye, where would the sense of hearing be? If the whole body were an ear, where would the sense of smell be? In other words, if the body were all encouragement, where would the correction be? If the body were all evangelists, where would the teaching be?" The tendency is to fault ourselves for incapability to do something. To do something that we're not designed for. Because that person can do it, and I can't, I should not be part of the body. It detracts from God's will for your life. Comparing ourselves with others denies God's power at work in our lives. The NIV in 1 Corinthians 12:18 says, "God has placed the parts in the body, every one of them, just as He wanted them to be." We looked last night at the idea of gifts being given out, and that we are to understand that God gave us the right gifts for us. So to say that I need that person's gift is denying God's power at work in your life. God has arranged the body parts as He pleased. So comparing ourselves to others is like saying that God didn't know what He was doing when He made you. Society would like to make us all the same, but God made every single one of us different. You know, you have been told all your life that there is only one you, that you are unique. You are so unique that you don't even have the same gifts as anyone else. Comparing ourselves with others directs us to laziness. Again, in 1 Corinthians 12:15, it says, "Because I am not a hand, I am not of the body." Or, "Because I don't have the gift of service, I don't have to clean up." You see, if all had the gift of leadership, what kind of body would we be? Who would you lead? Or, "Since I am not," and you fill in the gift, "then I can't do anything." Another obstacle we find is feelings of pride. You see, comparing ourselves with others leads to delusions of independence. In 1 Corinthians 12:21, it says, "The eye cannot say to the hand, 'I don't need you. What are you doing helping me pick things up?'" Well, my hand sure couldn't have gotten there without my eye seeing that, right? It leads to delusions of thinking that I don't need you to do this. By saying, "I don't need you," I'm saying, "I can get along by myself. by saying, I don't need you. I'm saying, I can do it better by myself. And to say, I don't need you, I'm saying, I can complete it all by myself. Really? You want to try and complete the Great Commission by yourself? Good luck. The prophets may say, if it's not my idea, then I'm against it. Woo! Away go the phlegmatics. Saying I can do it by myself leads to burnout. As I push myself to do other things I am not equipped to do, I need to recognize my limitations. That is not to say that you don't do things that are beyond your gifts. There are times when you must exercise other gifts. Luke 17:10 says, "So you also, when you have done everything you were told to do, should say, 'We are unworthy servants. We have only done our duty.'" You see, we are to humbly perform our duties. If you are using your gifts, I've said this several times now, if you are doing your gifts, if you are using them, it's something that's easy for you. It's not something that you get a big head about. Comparing ourselves with others leads to inappropriate behavior. You can step on one another. It can lead to the disrespect of other servants. Second Corinthians 12:22 reads, "On the contrary, those parts of the body that seem to be weaker are indispensable." Can you imagine if this whole church were full of prophets? If everybody thought they were right, what would happen if somebody got sick? That poor person would not be cared for. They'd be laying there all day without any help. Those people are indispensable. It can lead to the destruction of others or my spiritual gifts. 2 Corinthians 12:25 reads, "Parts we think are less honorable, we treat with special honor. And the parts that are unpresentable are treated with special modesty." You see, some gifts feel like they don't even deserve to be in public. They don't deserve recognition. They're working hard, but, oh, this is, you know, I'm just doing my duty. We treat them differently. They are a very special part of this church. Case in point, we might say, tongues really aren't necessary. Yet, it should be a desirable gift to have in the church today. How many of you can speak Mandarin? Spanish? Korean? You see, there are people in this country from all over the world. I was reading an article from, I think it was a Russian newspaper, and they were talking about how the U.S. came together over 9/11. And how interesting this country is. It is so diverse. There are every language spoken in the world is spoken here. And yet we came together over this one event, and it wasn't politically motivated or anything. Gifts like this are needed so that we can reach these people that are all around us. Anybody know what these are? Well, these are considered the two ugliest creatures in the world. This is the eye. It's a primate. It has teeth like that of a rodent that just keep growing. It's mostly skin with a little bit of hair. It has a tail that it can actually grab with. I don't know what its function is. God created that. This little guy is called the blubberfish, or the blobfish. He lives at depths of 3,000 to 5,000 feet below sea level around Australia and New Zealand. And at that depth, he looks like a regular fish, because all that pressure holds him together. But as soon as he comes to the surface, he loses his shape. No other fish can do what this little guy does down there. God created him. God created all the gifts. He created these little guys for His glory. And He created your gifts as well for His glory. You see, contrasting ourselves with others. Is that where we're at? No. Yeah, comparing ourselves with others detracts from God's glory. 1 Corinthians 12:24 says, "But God has put," or tempered according to King James, "the body together." God did it. God doesn't ask us to determine value. He puts us together where we are needed. Comparing ourselves with others causes division in the church. First Corinthians 12:25 says, "So that there should be no division or schism in the church." Comparing ourselves with others leads to indispensability. Again in verse 25 it says, "But that its parts should have equal concern for each other." We are to care for one another. Comparing ourselves with others causes us to think that others can't get along without me. I'm invaluable. Really? Actually, God can replace you pretty easy. There are other people with the gifts of whatever it might be. When I moved jobs, it didn't take long for them to fill my position. Power. It's an abuse of self-worth. Matthew 22:29 says, Jesus answered, "Ye do err, not knowing the power of God." God's miraculous powers are made known through our weakness, through our disease, through our infirmities, our sickness, not through our strength. We have a problem in this country. We rely on ourselves. We don't allow Him to be glorified. We don't allow His miraculous power to shine. First Corinthians 12:28 reads, "And God hath set some in the church." I thought I'd get it together tonight, but I guess not. Oh, the verse is already up there. "And God hath set some in the church, first apostles." So, first in relation to the various. First, in relation to all the others. In time, place, order, importance? No. You see, there always has to be something that happens first. There has to be a beginning. There has to be a first person at bat. Certain gifts need to function so that others can also function. One special ability is one of a kind. This does not make them more important. After God designed us, Don Howard said, He throws away the blueprints. I don't know that He does that, but you are one of a kind. One's ability is not a license to control. Just because you have the gift of leadership does not mean that you are to be so dogmatic. 2 Corinthians 12:10 says, "For when I am weak, then I am strong." In weakness, He gives us strength. You see, when we bring our feelings of worthlessness and place them on God's scales, He makes us worthy. He balances us out with a feeling of worth. When we bring those worthless feelings to Him, He takes care of us. He balances us. He puts people there to support us. The right gifts are in place. When we come before God and say, "You can replace me, I'm worthless. I don't I can't do this. Just put somebody else in there. He makes us worthy on His scales by saying, but they need me. And when we come to God, recognizing our weakness, and we place it on His scales, He makes us worthy and fills us with strength. Don't compare yourselves among yourselves. Bring your weaknesses to God. Bring those weaknesses in your chart to God, and He will bring people alongside of you that can help you. Desire that. And God will use you. He will make you bloom, and this church will grow. It can be fun. It can be a joy. And while the Christian life is hard, He makes it easier. I'm sorry for all my nervousness tonight and jumping around. I don't know what all the cause of that was. I think Satan just was wanting this not to to get across well. That's all I have for tonight. Do you have any questions you'd like to ask now, or you can ask me later? Are you working on your gift test? Yes. I will tell you tomorrow in Sunday school. Good question. Anyone else? All right. Well, tomorrow we're going to have another session during the Sunday school hour, and then we'll wrap up during the preaching time. If you'll all stand, we'll have a word of prayer here, and we will close. Our Father, our God, our Prince of Peace, we come before You, Lord. And we desire to humble ourselves, Lord. We desire to be in Your will. We desire not to detract from the way that You created us. Father, we desire to be placed on Your scales, to be made worthy, to be able to be used the way that You intended us to be used. Father, would You fill us with Your mercy and Your grace? Would You give us understanding? Father, would You reveal to us the gifts that You have given to us? Would we be willing to accept them? Would we be willing to understand them, to seek diligently to understand them? And Father, would You use us? Father, would You go with us from here? Would You give us rest? Would You bring us safely back in the morning? And Father, would Your name just be glorified? In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.